Okay, good. We'll start in a second. Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nolan. I'd like to welcome you to the program. Today, we'll be doing a continuation of the ongoing in-depth investigation on a major public health issue, and that is fluoridation. When you consider that over 150 million Americans consume their water fluoridated, and that fluoride has been very clearly documented to be a severe toxin, then we must ask, are conditions such as arthritis, fibromyalgia, neurological disorders, birth defects, are affected by fluoridation? And I'm going to explore those links today. On yesterday's program, I gave you an in-depth look at how we ended up getting fluoridated in the first place and the special interest groups behind that, mainly Alcoa Aluminum and the Mellon family, who controlled Alcoa, and also the Mellon family member who was on the board of Alcoa at the same time, was also Secretary of the Treasury. So there was a lot of self-serving conflict of interest, and good science was set on the side. When I completed my broadcast yesterday, I talked about the different ways you get fluoride without even knowing it, such as in the prepared baby foods, a big problem. A 1997 article in the Journal of the American Dental Association warns that some baby foods contain such high levels of fluoride that babies who eat the food risk dental fluorosis. It says, quote, any infants who regularly eat more than a couple of ounces of infant foods containing high fluoride content chicken would be at elevated fluorosis risk, unquote. The authors conclude that study by a warning, and yet the average American was not made aware of this. Fluoride exposure during infancy can be expected to increase the risk of fluoride-related illness, and since a recent study showed that the first year of life is the most critical period for fluoride exposure, extra attention should be paid on this. Children exposed during the first year of life, and to a lesser extent the second year, are far more likely to develop fluorosis than those whose exposure began later. The early mineralization, the teeth, the central incisors, and the first molars are most likely to be affected. Now, this is confirmed by a recent study of fluorosis risk. It says, quote, there is a substantial evidence that fluoridated water, fluoride supplements, infant formulas, and fluoride toothpaste are risk factors for fluorosis, unquote. And that was a comment from reports from Ohio State University researcher Dr. Anna Mascheris. And also, too often, dentists and physicians misprescribe fluoride. In fact, she concludes, a recent study of fluoridated and non-fluoridated communities in Brazil proved that fluoride toothpaste contributes to fluorosis. In the study, children who started using fluoride before the age of 3 were 440% more likely to have dental fluorosis than those who started using it at the age of 3. Dr. Conant observes that, quote, the levels of fluoride put into water, one part per million, is 100 times higher than normally found in mother's milk, which is 0.01 parts per million. There are no benefits, only risks, for infants ingesting this heightened level of fluoride at such an early age. This is an age where susceptibility to environmental toxins is particularly high, unquote. Fluorosis gets worse as a child approaches puberty. According to a study done in Norway, the study showed a significant increase in the severity of fluorosis with age and was observed in a low fluoride community. Fluorosis resulting from high fluoride content of drinking water increases between the ages of 10 and 14. But beyond this is the larger issue that this study brings up. Is it wise to subject children and others who are heavy juice drinkers, meaning bottled juices, to additional fluoride in their water. Now, here's a little publicized reality. Cooking can greatly increase a food's fluoride content. Peas, for example, contain 12 micrograms of fluoride when raw, 1,500 micrograms after they've been cooked in fluoridated water. That's a tremendous difference. Also, we should keep in mind that fluoride is an ingredient in pharmaceuticals, aerosols, insecticides, and pesticides. And, of course, toothpaste. It's interesting to note that in the 1950s, fluoridated toothpaste were required to carry a warning on their labels saying that they were not to be used in areas where water was already fluoridated. Crest toothpaste went so far as to write, quote, "Caution, children under six should not use Crest," unquote. These regulations were dropped in 1958, although no new research was available to prove that the overdose hazard no longer existed. Today, common fluoride levels in toothpaste are 1,000 parts per million. Research chemist Wolfend Ligon notes that swallowing a small amount of toothpaste adds substantially to fluoride intake. Dentists say that children commonly ingest 0.5 milligrams of fluoride a day from toothpaste. After all, when you're brushing your teeth, some toothpaste is bound to go down the throat. Dr. Hardy Limebeck cites studies conducted by the toothpaste manufacturers showing that children under the age of six typically swallow as much as 60% of the toothpaste that gets in their mouths. Quote, "The warning labels, in my personal opinion, are there to get them off the hook in the next 10 years. People who've been exposed to too much fluoride ingested before the tubes were labeled have a case against toothpaste makers. They weren't told that a lifetime of fluoride ingestion may be harmful," unquote. Now, this inevitably raises another issue. How safe is all this fluoride? Remember, you're getting fluoride in your mouthwash, toothpaste, supplements, water, on your produce if it's not organic. According to scientists and informed physicians such as Dr. John Lee, it is not safe at all. Dr. Lee first took an anti-fluoridation stance in 1972 when, as chairman of an environmental and health committee for a local medical society, he was asked to state their position on the subject. He stated that after investigating the references given for both pro and con fluoridationists, the group discovered three important things. One, the claims of the benefits of fluoride, the 60% reduction in cavities, was not established by any scientific studies, hence was a lie. Two, he said, quote, "We found that the investigations into the toxic side effects of fluoride have not been done in a way that was acceptable. And three, we discovered that the estimate of the amount of fluoride in the food chain, in the total daily fluoride intake, had been measured in 1943 and not since then. By adding the amount of fluoride that we now have in the food chain, which comes from processed foods with fluoridated water, plus all the fluoridated toothpaste, that has not been present since 1943, we found that the daily intake of fluoride was far in excess of what was considered optimal," unquote. What happens when fluoride intake exceeds the optimal? Well, the inescapable fact is that this substance has been associated with severe health problems, ranging from skeletal and dental fluorosis to bone fractures to fluoride poisoning, even cancer and arthritis. Let's take a look at some of these. Let's look first at dental fluorosis. According to a 1989 National Institutes of Dental Research study, 2% of children living in areas fluoridated at one part per million, that's normal part per million, develop dental fluorosis, that is permanently stained brown mottled teeth. Up to 23% of children living in areas naturally fluoridated at 4 parts per million develop severe dental fluorosis. Other research gives higher figures. The publication Health Effects of Ingested Fluoride, put up by the National Academy of Sciences, reports that in areas with optimally fluoridated water, meaning 1 part per million, either natural or added, dental fluorosis levels in recent years ranged up to 51%. Recently, a prevalence of slightly over 80% That means 80% of children reported age 12 to 14 in Augusta, Georgia, be suffering from dental fluorosis because of the fluoride in the water. Fluoride is a noteworthy chemical additive in that its officially acknowledged benefit and damage levels are about the same. Writing in The Progressive, scientist journalist Daniel Grossman elucidates the point. He says, though many beneficial chemicals are dangerous when consumed at excessive levels, fluoride is unique because the amount that dentists recommend to prevent cavities is about the same as the amount that causes dental fluorosis. Now, although the American Dental Association and the government consider dental fluorosis only a cosmetic problem, the American Journal of Public Health states, quote, brittleness of moderately or severely modeled teeth may be associated with elevated caries levels, unquote. In other words, in these cases, the fluoride is causing the exact problem that it's supposed to prevent. And one scientist states, quote, in highly naturally fluoridated areas, the teeth actually crumble as a result. These are the first visible symptoms of fluoride poisoning. Also, when considering dental fluorosis, there are factors beyond the physical that you couldn't ignore. The negative psychological effects of having moderately or severely modeled teeth. These were recognized in 1984 with the National Institute of Mental Health panel that looked into this problem. A telling trend is that TV commercials for toothpaste and toothpaste tubes themselves are now downplaying fluoride content as a virtue. This was noted in an article in the Sarasota, Florida Echo Report, whose author, George Glaser, feels that manufacturers are distancing themselves from the additive because of fears of lawsuits. The climate is ripe for these. The Glaser points out that such a class action suit has already been filed in England against the manufacturers of fluoride-containing products on behalf of children suffering from dental fluorosis. Still, certain segments of industry have yet to get the message. A recent newspaper ad campaign promotes Danone's Fluoride to Go spring water for, quote, kids who can't sit still, unquote. Supplied in convenient kid-sized bottles with a pop-up athletic cap kids adore, the product perpetuates fluoride's false promise of better dental health for the new generation of kids for whom bottled water is more desirable than soda pop. And the irony is that the shift from pop to water is one thing that does impact children's dental health significantly. Fluoride is totally out of place in this scenario. It makes one wonder how much fluoride might be in the other brands of bottled water, including Evian or Volvic, which are owned by Danone's parent company. Let's look at skeletal fluorosis. When fluoride is ingested, approximately 93% of it is absorbed into the bloodstream. A good part of fluoride is excreted, but the rest is deposited in your bones and teeth, and it's capable of causing a crippling skeletal fluorosis. This is a condition that can damage the musculoskeletal nervous system and result in muscle wasting, limited joint motion, spine deformities, calcification of the ligaments, as well as neurological defects. Now, large numbers of people in China, Japan, India, the Middle East, and Africa have been diagnosed with skeletal fluorosis from drinking naturally fluoridated water. In India alone, nearly 1 million people suffer from the affliction. And while only a dozen cases of skeletal fluorosis have been reported in the United States, Chemical and Engineering News states that, quote, critics of the EPA's standards speculate that there probably have been many more cases of fluorosis, even crippling fluorosis, than the reported cases in the literature because most doctors in the United States have not studied the disease and do not even know how to diagnose it. And because some symptoms of skeletal fluorosis mimic those of arthritis, the first two clinical phases of fluorosis can be easily misdiagnosed as arthritis. According to Dr. Paul Conant, the causes of most forms of osteoarthritis are unknown. It is not implausible that the high prevalence of arthritis in America, over 42 million Americans have it, may be related to our high levels of fluoride intake. And Dr. Harvey Lineback says, we're quite concerned that fluoride accumulates through a lifetime of water fluoridation and causes the bone to become more brittle. We started a study, and we're close to publishing it, that shows that people who have been exposed to just 20 years of fluoridated water have twice the amount of fluoride in their bones. Now, there are all kinds of epidemiological studies that show that people who live in fluoridated areas have a higher risk of hip and other fractures, such as forearm fractures when they fall down. So this is quite a concern. I personally don't think that we need to be ingesting fluoride to protect our kids' teeth because they're already protected at a maximum. The rest of us are swallowing it as this fluoride from the drinking water and possibly increasing the risk of bone fracture. It just doesn't make any sense at all. Unquote. Radiologic changes in bone occur when fluoride exposure is 5 milligrams per day. According to the late Dr. George Walbot, author of Fluoridation, The Great Dilemma, while this 5 milligrams a day level is the amount of fluoride ingested by most people living in fluoridated areas, the number increases for diabetics and laborers who can ingest up to 20 parts of fluoride daily. In addition, a survey conducted by the Department of Agriculture shows that 3% of the U.S. population drinks 4 liters or more of water a day. Now, if these individuals live in areas where the water contains a fluoride level of 4 parts per million, allowed by the EPA, they are ingesting 16 milligrams a day from the consumption of water alone and are thus at a greater risk of getting skeletal fluorosis. And that leads us to bone fractures. At one time, fluoride therapy was recommended for building denser bones and preventing fractures associated with osteoporosis. Now, several articles in peer-reviewed journals suggest that fluoride actually causes more harm than good, as it is associated with bone breakage. 3 studies reported in the Journal of the American Medical Association showed links between hip fractures and fluoride. Findings here were, for instance, that there is a, quote, small but significant increase in the risk of hip fractures in men and women exposed to artificial fluoridation at just 1 part per million. That's how much is in your drinking water if you're listening to this program right now. In addition, the New England Journal of Medicine reports that people given fluoride to cure the osteoporosis actually wound up with an increased non-vertebral fracture rate. And Austrian researchers have also found that fluoride tablets make bones more susceptible to fractures. The National Research Council states that the U.S. hip fracture rate is now the highest in the world. A 2000 article in the Journal of Fluoride describes the bone effects of fluoride in detail. Fluoride may increase bone quantity, osteofluorosis or osteosclerosis, but also decrease bone quality and bone strength. It is well known that pharmaceutical doses of fluoride increase the risk of torsion-type fractures, such as hip fractures, despite the appearance of greater bone density. And conventional medicine interprets the observed fluoride-induced increase of serum alkaline phosphatate concentration as a sign of osteoblast activity. Actually, they're wrong. It's a reflection of increased mortality of osteocytes within the bone. Osteocytes are rich in alkaline phosphatase, which is released when the cells are killed by fluoride. It is unlikely, therefore, that a window of fluoride-induced bone benefit exists. Quite simply, put in lay language, for all of you who've been using fluoride tablets to prevent osteoporosis, to help prevent hip fractures, it does just the opposite. It can actually increase osteoporosis and increase bone fractures and hip fractures. So do not use fluoride supplementation. Do not give it to your children. I have reviewed the entire world literature. I have found not one single credible study that shows that children need fluoride. They simply don't. Now, fluoride's deleterious effect on bone is well documented. Early experiments using large doses of fluoride as a treatment for osteoporosis had disastrous results. Dr. Rich warned that rather than strengthening bones, fluoride could cause osteoarthritis, as well as gastric pain, calcification of the arteries, which leads to arterial sclerosis and atherosclerosis, and visual disturbances. Dr. Paul Connett cites 2 epidemiological studies suggesting a possible association with osteosarcoma, a bone cancer, in young men living in fluoridated areas. One is the report of the National U.S. Toxicological Program mentioned earlier, which first uncovered the epidemiological evidence of increased osteosarcoma in boys and young men living in fluoridated areas. The second is a study conducted by the New Jersey Department of Health. Dr. Perry Cohen studied the evidence of the rare bone cancer in seven New Jersey communities relative to water fluoridation in fluoridated areas, increases of osteosarcoma bone cancer in boys under the ages of 10 was 460% higher than in non-fluoridated areas, 350% higher in the 10 to 19-year-old age group, and over twice as high in the 20 to 50-year-old age group. Scientists at Yale University discovered that doses as low as just one part per million fluoride, that's what you get in a glass of water, decreased bone strength, decreased elasticity, made fractures more likely. Another group of researchers found that fluoride accelerated the development of osteoporosis. A 1992 study of elderly patients found a small but significant increase in the risk of hip fracture of both men and women who had been drinking fluoridated water at one part per million. As with the bone cancer, the adverse effects of fluoride accumulation on bone strength were greater in men than women. Fluoride has the potential to increase skeletal mass to a greater extent than any other pharmaceutical agent. Yet it's proven difficult to translate this into therapeutic benefit for patients with low bone mass and diseases such as osteoporosis. According to a 1996 study by Michigan's Center for Osteoporosis Research, this apparent paradox can be explained in part by toxic actions of the ion on skeletal mineralization, impairment of normal processes of bone reabsorption, and fluoride-induced decreases in strength per unit of bone. Now, Belgium arthritis researchers reviewed 30 years of clinical research on fluoride in the treatment of osteoporosis. They point out that fluoride has a dual effect on osteoblasts. Those are the cells from which bones are made. On the one hand, it increases the birth rate of osteoblasts, while on the other hand, it has a toxic effect on the individual cells with mineralization impairment and reduced apposition rate resembling osteomalacia. Fluoride has a positive effect on axial bone density, they say, but the axial bone gain is not matched by similar changes in cortical bone. And by the way, the cortical bone is the hard outer part of the bone where bone's main strength lies. And among the studies cited, two show an increased rate of hip fracture among patients treated with high doses of fluoride. Now, in an experiment on cow bone, fluoride treatment reduced the mechanical strength of the bone tissue by converting small amounts of bone mineral to mostly calcium fluoride. And this action reduces the structurally effective bone mineral content substantially. And a Polish study published in 1999 found that treatment with fluoridated water decreases the bending strength of the femoral, neck, and shaft bones. Quite simply, on all levels, your bones are going to be hurt if you take fluoride. Your bones are going to be demineralized if you take fluoride. And if you're drinking fluoridated water, you're going to have a greater likelihood of having a hip fracture or some other form of bone abnormality. Now, New Zealand review of recent scientific literature reveals a consistent pattern of hip fractures, skeletal fluorosis, and the effects of fluoride on bone structure. And fluoride levels in bones and osteosarcomas, bone cancer, show a causal mechanism by which fluoride damages bones. And public health authorities in Australia and New Zealand have appeared reluctant to consider openly and frankly the implications of this. And earlier scientific evidence unfavorable to the continuation of the fluoride drinking water supplies. And Dr. Connor reports that of 18 studies conducted since 1990, 10 have found an association between water fluoridation and hip fractures in the elderly. And one study found a dose-related increase in hip fractures at the concentration of fluoride of just one part per million. Hip fractures is a very serious condition. People die from it. In fact, a quarter of all the people who have a hip fracture die from it within a year of the operation. And 50% of the people who recover from the operation never regain an independent existence. Now, for those who say, well, but fluoride's not a big issue, it's under control. Well, no, it isn't. Let me just take you on a little journey of the fluoride poisoning. In May 1992, 260 people were poisoned. One man died in Hoopa Bay, Alaska, after drinking water contaminated with 150 parts of fluoride. The accident was attributed to poor equipment and an unqualified operator. Was this a fluke? Not at all. Over the years, the CDC has recorded several incidents of excessive fluoride permeating the water supply and sickening or killing people. And we don't usually hear about these occurrences in news reports. But interested citizens have learned the truth from data obtained under the Freedom of Information Act. Let me just share a partial list, and this is only a small list because time does not permit me to list everything. July 1993, Chicago. Three dialysis patients died. Five experienced toxic reactions to the fluoridated water used in the treatment process. And the CDC was asked to investigate, but to date, they have never released a press statement on it. May 1993, Kodiak, Alaska, Old Harbor. Population was warned not to consume water due to high fluoride levels. There was also a caution against bottling or boiling the water, since this concentrates the substance and worsens the danger. And although equipment appeared to be functioning normally, 22 parts per million of fluoride was found in the sample. July 1992, Marin County, California. A pump malfunctioned, allowing too much fluoride into the Bond Temple treatment plant. 2 million gallons of fluoridated water were diverted to Phoenix Lake, elevating the lake surface by more than 2 inches and forcing some water over the spillway. December 1991, Benton Harbor, Michigan. A faulty pump allowed approximately 900 gallons of hydrofluorocystic acid to leak into the chemical storage building at the water plant. City engineer Ronald Klocko stated, quote, "The concentrated hydrofluorocystic acid was so corrosive that it ate through more than 2 inches of concrete in the storage building. This water did not reach water consumers, but fluoridation was stopped until June of 1993. The original equipment was only 2 years old. In July 1991, Port Gate, Michigan, after a fluoride injector pump failed, fluoride levels reached 92 parts per million and resulted in approximately 40 children developing abdominal pain, sickness, vomiting, and diarrhea at a school arts and crafts show. November 1979, Annapolis, Maryland. One patient died, eight became ill after renal dialysis systems, and symptoms included cardiac arrest, hypertension, chest pain, difficulty breathing, and a whole gamut of intestinal problems. Patients not on dialysis also reported nausea, headaches, cramps, diarrhea, and dizziness. And the fluoride level was later found to be 35 parts per million. And the problem was traced to a valve at a water plant that had been left open all night. Now, instead of addressing fluoridation's problematic safety record, officials have chosen to cover it up. For example, the ADA, American Dental Association, says in one booklet distributed to health agencies that, quote, "Fluoride feeders are designed to stop operating when a malfunction occurs, so prolonged overfluoridation becomes a mechanical impossibility," unquote. Well, in addition, the information that does reach the population after an accident is woefully inaccurate. A spill in Annapolis, Maryland placed thousands at risk, but officials reported on only eight. Perhaps officials are afraid that they will invite more lawsuits than the one for $480 million by the wife of a dialysis patient who became brain injured as a result of fluoride poisoning. And not all fluoride poisoning is accidental. For decades, industry has knowingly released massive quantities of fluoride into the air and water, and disenfranchised communities with people less able to fight back are often the victims. Medical writer Joel Griffiths relays this description of what industrial pollution can do. And in this case, to a devastatingly poisoned Indian reservation. Cows crawled around the pasture on their bellies, inching along like giant snails, so crippled by the bone disease they could not stand up. This was the only way they could graze. Some died kneeling after giving birth to stunted calves. Others kept on crawling until no longer able to chew because their teeth had crumbled down to the nerves. They began to starve. They were the cattle of the Mohawk Indians on a New York Canadian St. Regis reservation during the period 1960 to 75, when industrial pollution devastated the herd, and along with it, the Mohawks' way of life. Mohawk children, too, have shown signs of damage to bones and teeth. Mohawks filed suit against the Reynolds Metals Company and the Aluminum Company of America, Alcoa, in 1960, but ended up settling out of court where they received $650,000 for their cows. Fluoride is one of industry's major pollutants, and no one remains immune to its effects. In 1989, 155,000 tons were being released annually into the air, and 500,000 tons a year were disposed of in our lakes, our rivers, and our oceans. Let's take a look at cancer. Numerous studies demonstrate links between fluoridation and cancer. However, agencies promoting fluoride consistently refute or cover up the findings. Now, I give you this information. Those of you who are just tuning on, I'm Gary Nall, and this is a special in-depth original investigative report on Fluoride, a Deadly Legacy, Part 2. One of the reasons I believe that many people tune into my programs, both on WBAI and across the Pacifica and other non-commercial station networks, is because of hope. I like to focus upon the positive solutions to devastating problems. Even when doing investigation, if you can think of it this way, well, where's the good news in this story? You're explaining how our teeth could become brittle and stained and mottled, how we could end up with bone cancer and other conditions, neurological damage. Where's the good news? The good news is that up to this point, you would be consuming something that's hurting you, and now at least by changing over, having the option to change over from fluoridated to non-fluoridated, from regular produce to organic, stopping all the propaganda on fluoridation, you can rebuild your health and overcome the arthritis and other conditions. So, yeah, it's looking at it from that perspective. If I were to do a special on what's wrong with tranquilizers, and I have, I'm quite sure many people would stop before they took another tranquilizer and say, you know, I heard Gary saying, here's what's wrong with tranquilizers. Do I really want that in my body? Do I need it? Is there any other option? And then you go from a problem, ignorance, not knowing, to a solution, awareness of what's causing a problem, and then how to capture a positive answer. So let's look at some of the other things that we could be preventing, including cancer. Numerous studies demonstrate links between fluoridation and cancer. And even in the earliest days of fluoridation, there were clear indications of the fluoride cancer link. In the early 1950s, Dr. Alfred Taylor, a biochemist at the University of Texas, conducted a series of experiments in which cancer-prone mice consuming water treated with sodium fluoride were found to have shorter lifespans than similar mice drinking distilled water. Taylor's studies were carried out twice because after the first run, the scientist himself discovered that the chow that his mice had eaten had itself contained fluoride, thus clouding the results. On his own initiative, Taylor ran the whole experiment a second time. The second run with mice fed fluoride-free chow was conclusive. Clearly, fluoride could no longer be considered a harmless additive to drinking water. John Remington Graham and Pierre-Jean Morin, in their exhaustive survey of fluoridated litigation, observed that, quote, Taylor's work was published at a politically sensitive time because the last stages of the much-boosted surveys at Newburgh and Kensington were underway. The obvious meaning of Dr. Taylor's results was that a possible danger to human health had been overlooked, and that widespread fluoridation should be delayed until the situation had been clarified. However, the American Dental Association and the U.S. Public Health Service had already endorsed and begun the drive to promote fluoridation. What happened next is a classic study in denial. The final report published by the authors at the Newburgh-Kensington study refers only to the results of Taylor's first round of rats in the test, even though his second conclusive round had been peer-reviewed and published over 2 years before. They wrote, quote, "The reports of Alfred Taylor, a biochemist at University of Texas, on the increased incidence of cancer in mice drinking fluoridated treated water have been shown to be unfounded, since the food he was giving the mice had many times the fluoride content in drinking water, and food was supplied to both the control and experimental groups. Subsequent tests did not confirm the differences," unquote. Well, that's an out-and-out lie. That just shows you how lacking in decency the American Dental Association is. And the U.S. Public Health Service, they simply lied. What's interesting is that you or I, confronted with a major issue, try to hide the facts, cover them up. We could be hit with obstruction of justice. But if a government agency lies, or if the American Dental Association lies, as they routinely do, no one challenged them. Now, they had the evidence. It's not that they weren't aware that a second study done, published in a peer-reviewed journal, showed that fluoride did cause problems with cancer. And they denied it. I'm quoting directly from them. They say that subsequent tests did not confirm the differences, unquote. And that was in the Journal of the American Dental Association by an article by a group of scientists called the Newburgh-Kensington Caries Fluoride Study Final Report. And they were lying. Out and out lied. So please keep in mind that there is so much of science today that has been compromised. I've asked this audience on many occasions to please stay neutral until you are able to review all the facts and then make your mind up in whatever way you choose from the facts at hand. We are a society that almost always makes our mind up by impressions, by vague interpretations, by not doing our homework. And people see this. And when they see that we're not willing to do our homework, then they move right into that breach and they offer their opinions of things. But because they're so-called experts, their opinion is passed off as if it were fact. Give you an example. If I ask you this question, and I've just, by the way, I was just filming this yesterday. There's a retrospective 20-year study at the Museum of the City of New York on AIDS. And I thought, what a great opportunity to take a whole 20-year retrospective and film it for a documentary we're working on. And I'm closing it on, finishing it in the next 2 weeks. And so when I went over there and I was doing some filming, I saw a little statement chart, and it said that HIV, the cause of AIDS, was discovered in 1984. Well, it just so happens, to prove how wrong that is I managed to get the CDC's original footage of the original press conference, which was held at a French restaurant in Bethesda, Maryland. Not before scientific peer review group, not having published a paper before this. It was science by press release. And there was Margaret Heckler, commissioner of the Health and Human Resources, and Robert Gallo. And the words, and you can, I have the transcript, and you can hear for yourself. And in my document, you see it, it said the probable cause. Mind you, the word probable, meaning hypothetical situation. We have no proof. We think, we believe, we hope we have found the cause of AIDS. Never once was it stated that they had found the cause of AIDS. No proof was given that this was the cause of AIDS. Instead, probable. Every single news media covering that, overnight, the cause of AIDS had been determined. Now imagine that something that flawed, that incredible, would be then the basis upon which the largest single medical industry the world has ever seen would be born. Today, more money is being spent on AIDS research than on cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and arthritis combined. Now, those are real killers. Those are real diseases. The 30 separate diseases which are real and can kill you that we call AIDS are not due to this single weak lentivirus, HIV. And yet, because the money is there, and if you challenge the money, you don't get the money. If you challenge the cause of AIDS, you don't get the money. If you challenge the appropriateness of the research, you don't get the money. So I can show you corresponding areas within our society of science where science has simply ceased to be objective, completely objective, not even pretending to be objective. Just because of its position of power, we all assume it's objective. And this just gives you an idea how the Journal of the American Dental Association falsified material. Not lied. No ands or buts or for. 100% unequivocally, this statement is a lie. And yet, think of how that lie would impact. If someone says we did the definitive study and there's no connection between cancer and fluoride, then all the other doors shut on that. And now it's confirmed in everyone's mind a truth. Fluoride doesn't cause cancer. It was published. It was shown it didn't. An entire belief based upon a lie. How many other beliefs do we have based upon faulty information, compromised science, bias reporting, completely misguided efforts? That's why it's so important you learn the facts. And of course, all my facts and all my footnotes, all my references to all my statements, including a complete text of this report, will appear tomorrow on GaryNall.com under issues, important health issues. And thus far this year, we have 12 primary health issues that we've put a ton of material up there for you to guide you. So, and this same denial has been repeated over and over and over for the succeeding 45 years by the United States Public Health Service and its affiliates. Graham and Morin cite a standard history of the National Institutes of Dental Research published over 35 years later, alleging that Dr. Taylor refrained from publishing his findings, quote, because he was unable to confirm those results in the second experiment, unquote. The author of this lie goes on to say, quote, that a literature search of scientific journals failed to show any publication of this work by Taylor, unquote. Well, let me tell you, friend, if you're that incapable, you're that sloppy, you're that biased, you're that pathetic as a research scientist, you shouldn't be publishing anything. Because you did not do your homework. I found the study. It was there. And you should have found it. Therefore, I have to question, what was the real intent of you telling people that there were no studies? Legal scholars Graham and Morin comment, quote, the most powerful forensic evidence of the importance of Dr. Taylor's work is that the U.S. Public Health Service have done so much to conceal it, unquote. What does this mean? In lay language, it means the U.S. Public Health Service are pathological in their presentation on fluoride. They are habitual lying, incapable of telling the truth, and therefore must be considered nothing more than perpetrators of public health fraud and a form of medical genocide. They should be disbanded, replaced, and the entire agency, which is utterly worthless in any of its concrete efforts, because it's had none. It's a failed program. But it's like a Hollywood producer. The worse the film you make, the bigger your budget for your next film. You fell up in Hollywood, and that also is true with these government agencies. And on fluoride, they have lied and lied and lied. That was not to be the last study to reveal carcinogenic effects of fluoride, and it was not to be the last fluoride-related cover-up. In 1977, Dr. John Yamianis and Dr. Dean Burke, former chief chemist at the National Cancer Institute, released a study that linked fluoridation to 10,000 cancer deaths per year in the United States. 10,000. Their inquiry, which compared cancer deaths in the 10 largest fluoridated American cities to those in the 10 largest unfluoridated American cities between 1940 and 50, discovered a 5% greater rate of cancer in the fluoridated areas. Well, Dr. Yamianis and Dean Burke were challenged, and they presented their paper at the 57th Annual Meeting of the American Society of Biological Chemists, and was published in Fluoride, Volume 10, Number 3, page 102 to 103. Now, of course, you had people who disputed these findings, and since an earlier analysis of their apparently efforts failed to pick up these extra deaths, federal authorities claimed that Yamianis and Burke were in error and that any increase was caused by statistical changes over the years in age, gender, and racial composition. So in order to settle the question of whether or not fluoride causes cancer, a congressional subcommittee instructed the National Toxicology Program to perform another investigation. That study, due in 1980, was not released until 1990. However, in 1986, while the study was delayed, the EPA raised the standard fluoride level in drinking water from 2.4 parts to 4 parts per million, a purely political trick by a corrupt agency, inept officials in the pocket of the commercial interest. Once again, our government agencies for hire. You just got to get in line. It's a lottery. And we have to understand something. Virtually every office is a lottery. The President of the United States, you don't really think that the morons in office actually could do anything on their own. They can't even talk on their own. They have to have speech writers and committees and groups that first tell them how to answer a question. Start by saying, "My name is George." "Good, George." "Now, it is pathetic. It is an embarrassment." And we actually take these things seriously, like an election. We take it seriously. Why should we? It's not a serious proposition. Because it's a lottery. We have no democratic process whatsoever. And if you think we do, by God, call me and prove it. Prove to me we can elect anyone into a legislative office based upon the merits of the person's character and principles of public service program rather than upon their capacity to raise funds. And who then gives them the funds and who then affects their legislative stance. Anything other is just a cheap, vulgar burlesque of a political process, intellectual bottom feeders. And that's where it's at. So why should we be surprised when every agency continues to support the special interest and not the truth? And the EPA is at the top of the list to one of the most utterly corrupt agencies in the history of government. You thought the IRS was bad. They are. And Justice Department? Pathetic. The FDA? Reckless and relentless in their pursuit of the wrong people. But don't leave out the EPA. Not the day-to-day scientist. They're conscientious. The political appointments. That's where the problem begins. When the National Toxicological Report study results became known in early 1990, the union president, Dr. Robert Carlton, who works in the EPA's Toxic Substance Division, published a statement. It read, in part, quote, "4 years ago, the NFFE Local 2050, which represents all 1,100 professionals at EPA headquarters, alerted then-administrator Lee Thomas to the fact that the scientific support documents for the fluoride and drinking water standard were fatally flawed. The fluoride juggernaut proceeded as it apparently had for the last 40 years without any regard for the facts or concern for public health." EPA raised the allowed levels of fluoride before the results of the rat-mouse study ordered by Congress in 1977 was complete. Today, we find out how irresponsible that decision was. The results reported by NTP, explained today by Dr. Yamianis, are, as he notes, not surprising considering the vast amount of data that caused the animal study to be conducted in the first place. The results are not surprising that the Union 2050 either. 4 years ago, we realized the claim that there was no evidence that fluoride could cause genetic effects or cancer could not be supported by the shoddy document thrown together by the EPA contractor. Quote, it was apparent to us that the EPA bowed to political pressure without having done an in-depth independent analysis using in-house experts of the currently existing data that show fluoride causes genetic effects, promotes the growth of cancerous tissue, and is likely to cause cancer in humans. If EPA had done so, it would have been readily apparent, as it was to Congress in 1977, that there were serious reasons to believe in a cancer threat. The behavior of the EPA in this affair raises questions about the integrity of science at EPA and the role of professional scientists, lawyers, and engineers who provide the interpretation of the available data and the judgments necessary to protect the public health and the environment. Are scientists at EPA there to arrange facts to fit preconceived conclusions? Does the agency have a responsibility to develop world-class experts in the risk posed by chemicals we are exposed to every day? Or is it permissible for the EPA to cynically shop around for contractors who will provide them the correct answers? What were the MPA study results? Out of the 130 male rats that ingested 45 to 79 parts per fluoride, 5 developed osteosarcoma, a rare bone cancer. There were cases in both male and females at those doses of squamous cell carcinoma in the mouth. Both rats and mice had dose-related fluorosis of the teeth, and female rats suffered osteosclerosis of the long bones. When Dr. Yamianis analyzed the same data, he found mice with a particularly rare form of liver cancer. This cancer is so rare, according to Dr. Yamianis, that the odds of its appearance in this study by chance were 1 in 2 million in male rats and 1 in 100,000 female. He also found precancerous lesions in oral squamous cells, an increase in squamous cell tumors and cancers, and thyroid follicular cell tumors as a result of increasing levels of fluoride in drinking water. In March, on the 13th, 1990, the New York Times article commented on the NTP findings. Quote, previous animal tests suggest that water fluoridation might pose risk to humans have been widely discounted as technically flawed, but the latest investigation carefully weeded out sources of experimental or statistical error, many scientists say, and cannot be discounted. In the same article, biologist Dr. Edwin Groth notes, quote, the importance of this study is that it is the first fluoride bioassay giving positive results in which the latest state-of-the-art procedures have been rigorously applied. It has to be taken seriously, unquote. On February 22, 1990, the Medical Tribune, an international medical news weekly received by 125,000 doctors, offered the opinion of a federal scientist who preferred to remain anonymous. Quote, it is difficult to see how the EPA can fail to regulate fluoride as a carcinogen in light of what the MPT study has found. Osteosarcomas are an extremely unusual result in rat carcinogenicity tests. Toxicologists tell me that the only other substance that has produced this is radium. The fact that this is a highly atypical form of cancer implicates fluoride as the cause. Also, osteosarcomas appear to be dose-related and did not occur in controls, making it a clean study, unquote. In lay language, it showed what the EPA refused to show. Fluoride had caused cancer. Did you know about it? No. Do you know about it today? No. I took those results to Mayor Koch's office at the time and tried to influence, as best as possible, them to start examining the pros and cons of fluoride. It has not been done. It was not done then. It has not been done now. Hopefully, with all the data we have at hand now, including the most comprehensive scientific paper ever put together on fluoride, Fluoride, A Deadly Legacy, on my webpage, and these presentations, we can reintroduce this argument to the general public who are concerned. The question is, should you and your children be exposed to a known, proven cancer-causing agent every time you drink a glass of water? I believe you should not have to be exposed. I'm Gary Knoll, bringing us to an end of part two of Fluoride: A Daily Legacy. I'll look forward to continuing this program tomorrow. Have a nice day. Thank you very much for listening.